Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning.
Morning.
Welcome to Next Level Church. My name is Rob. I'm one of the pastors here, and so honored that you're here today. I don't know if you've heard it all throughout the service so far, but there's a lot of sickness, and I'm really, really honored that you still came to church, even though you're sick. But just for a favor of us all, let's just do a lot of fist pumping today. Not a lot of hugs. Normally we're a hug in church, but keep away from the hugs and cough into the elbow, okay? That's just good rules of thumb for everyone. I really don't want to get sick, but I'm honored that you guys are here today and really excited for what God, I think, is going to do in this service. I would like to encourage you and ask you, if you're new, to check out something. What you're about to experience will be made better if you check out this free app called YouVersion. And in YouVersion, there's a live page that allows you to get a little bit more out of what you're about to experience. There's a place to take notes. You can give prayer requests. There's a question of the week. All the scriptures I'm going to cover are in there. And you can give online. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So take a chance and dive into that. If you're a regular tender, go ahead and open up YouVersion. And before we dive in to our topic for today, I want to give you a chance to simply talk to God. And this is the reason why I want to do this, and it's the reason why I do it pretty often before we go into the talk part of the service. I don't know about you for sure, but when I come in on a Sunday, there's a lot of things that are on my mind, and it is very easy to get distracted. Just to let you know how my mind works, literally, as I walked up the stage, I took a deep breath, and I had this thought, did I put deodorant on today? Literally, that is what's going on in my mind as I walked up, and I'm processing, did I put deodorant? I'm pretty sure. I'm at about 75% sure that I put deodorant on today. I'm still not positive. Now, here's the problem with that. Whatever thoughts you're bringing into here, it is potentially taking away from you hearing from God. And if you had a rough week, it is that much harder to hear from God. If you're excited about something coming up, there are two pretty big football games coming up later this afternoon. If your mind's on that, it might be really difficult to hear from God. And so what I want us to do is I want us to just kind of still our hearts and still our minds and ask God to speak to us. But there's a second part of what I want you to do, and the second part is your part. Because see, it doesn't matter if God speaks to you if you're not willing to obey whatever he tells you to do. So the second part is saying, God, would you give me that courage? Would you give me the courage to obey you? Whatever you tell me to do, would you give me that discipline? Would you give me that courage? And so I want to invite you to say a simple prayer. It's a prayer that I pray almost every week before I get into a talk. And the prayer is simply this. God, would you speak to my heart? And would you give me the courage to do whatever you tell me to do? Would you guys pray that now? God, we just come before you, and there's so much on our minds. We are so easily distracted. And God, I just ask that you'd be louder than the other voices in our life. I ask that you'd be louder than our distractions. That, God, just for a few moments, we could hear from you. And God, this has to be spiritual because I'm just a man, and I'm broken just like everyone else. So would you say something that is not from me, but is from you? And God, would you give us the courage to obey and to listen and to do whatever you tell us to do? We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, today we're kicking off a brand new series called One Thing to Change in 2016. And as a human being, there's a great chance that you have some things that you want to work on. Most of you are not perfect. Some of you may think you're perfect, but most of you acknowledge that there are some imperfections in you. And those imperfections often cause us to do some reflecting. And when we dive into a new year, it is a time for change. And a lot of people, when they go into a new year, they make some resolutions. They say, I'm going to change some things about myself. Now, I did a poll in the last service and asked how many people had resolutions for 2016. Like 2.5 people raised their hand. And I think they were embarrassed about it. And my theory is that some of us have been burned so many times by setting a resolution and then not following through, we just don't want to disappoint ourselves. So going into 2016, we're like, I'm going to set the bar low. I have no goals. I have no aspirations. I'm just going to do me. I'm just going to live. I think, though, that's not the answer. If there's something in you that you want to change, that you want to work on, we do need to set some goals. There needs to be some things that we say, okay, if this is an area where I have a weakness in, or this is an area that I want to change, I need to set a goal to try to work on this. And for some of you, even if you didn't set a New Year's resolution, you are going into 2016 saying, this is the year that I'm going to work on my fitness. You're going to be up in the gym just working on your fitness. That's what you are saying. That's your anthem. That's your song for the year. And there's a great chance that as soon as we got into January, you went back to the gym and visited the regular attenders. You know the people that go all the time, not just in January and part of February. There's those that visit. The gym's really crowded for the first few weeks of the new year, and then it goes back to just the regular attenders. You visited with thousands of other people. The question is it going to stick? Now, some of you have a goal that you are going to get physically fit. Others of you, you've set the bar really, really low. And when it comes to fitness, you're like this pitcher. This is your 2016 goal for fitness. Yeah, I'm into fitness. Fitting this whole pizza in my mouth, that's your goal. The bar is really low for you. Now, can we just say, this is just a side note, this is completely free. You know, there's a lot of turmoil and tension in our country. There's a lot of things that people fight about. Even in this room, there's lots of things that we can disagree on. But can we just for a second all agree that pizza is awesome? Would you just raise your hand if you love pizza? There, man, look at that unity. That's unity right there. I will just say, this is. Please don't judge me on this, but I will say, if I find out that you do not like pizza, I have a hard time trusting you. Like, pizza is that good. Everybody loves pizza. Some of you, though, you have a goal to work on your finances. And for you, it's been a constant struggle. And 2015 brought some tension and brought some maybe even bad decisions or made some things that you didn't even count on. And you're going into the new year saying, we're going to do something different. But you don't have a plan, you don't have a goal. If that is you, and you want to work on the financial side of your life, this next semester of groups, we are offering a group. It's called Financial Peace University. And it is a system that has literally helped millions of people get out of debt and to give their finances to God. Our first group is filled. It filled up in like 0.5 seconds. And so we have a waiting list. As soon as that waiting list gets to 12 people, it will become an official group. So if in your mind at all, finances is part of your goal, wanting to get that in check, that is a group for you. Sign up for the waiting list, and we'll turn it into a real group. But you got to sign up fast. And if that fills up, we'll start another waiting list. And if that gets to 12, we'll start one. Because that is a real struggle for a lot of us, the financial side. Some of you, your goal, your mindset is the spiritual side. And in the church world, there are 2 months where church attendance tends to rise. And they typically come around change. The first time is in January. That in January, there are a lot of people who say, you know what, because of my life circumstances, or maybe there's a new kid that has just been born into our family, or maybe the last year wasn't that good, I'm going to go back to church, or I'm going to start going to church. So church attendance typically rises in January. The other month where typically church attendance rises is in September. When the summer ends, people are going back to school, they want to make some changes and say, this year, this school year, we're going to do things differently. So some of you have set a spiritual goal, and you say, hey, I want to add God, or I want more of God to be a part of my life. Now, I think goals are great, and I hope that you're setting some goals. If you didn't set some goals, I hope you have at least some ideas of things that you want to work on. This series, though, is not about setting goals. This series is about the one thing that you need to accomplish what God is stirring in your life. Because the truth of the matter is, we've all set goals, and we've all failed miserably at fulfilling them. The one thing that we're talking about in this series is the one thing that will actually help you change your life. This is something that is probably not on your radar. It's probably something that you've never taken a class on, and most of us have probably never even read a book on it. It is something that I was incredibly unfamiliar with. My whole life, I've never spent time thinking about this or trying to figure out how do I make this one area better. It wasn't until last year, 2015, in the fall, where I started doing some research on this topic. And I was blown away with how important this topic is. In fact, I was so blown away, I started thinking to myself, why isn't everyone focusing on this? Why isn't everyone teaching this? This is such an important thing. This is the reason so many of us set goals and then never follow through with them. So what is the one thing to work on in 2016? The one thing to work on in 2016 is your emotional health. Your emotional health. Now, we're going to see why this is so important. But I just want to give you a quick little snapshot. This is so important because if your emotions are not in check, they will drive the decisions that you make. Just for example, some of us in here, and I'm saying us, are emotional eaters. And you set a goal to get in better fitness, but as soon as stress happens, how do you try to cope your stress? It's going against the goal that you set. Some of us are emotional spenders, and you want to get your finances in check. But when you get stressed, when you get angry, when you get upset, you say, I've just got to spend money to make myself feel better. If your emotions are not in check, you will never fulfill the goals that God is stirring inside of you. This idea of emotional health is so crucial and important. Here's the thing, though. If you are a Christian and you've been coming to church for a long time, if you're into the spiritual world, Christianity of things, there's a great chance that when you hear emotional health, you'll say, that doesn't sound very spiritual. Like, I want to hear about, like, prayer or how to read my Bible better, or I want something that sounds more spiritual. And I get that. I think those things are really important. What I want to show you, though, through our text is that the Bible actually does talk a lot about our mental state and our mental health. And if we can get this one thing right, it will unlock the door to getting so many other things right. But until we've strengthened this one thing, we are constantly going to set goals and say, hey, I want to do this, but then we're going to fail miserably. Or we're going to say, hey, I want to change this, but you're not able to because your emotions are driving the decisions that you make. If you get healthy emotions, it'll help all of us to make better decisions. I want to show you this in our text. Our text is a text that is familiar to a lot of you, especially if you grew up in church. I want to give you a little bit of context, though. This text is something that Jesus said. And Jesus was getting trapped by a group of religious leaders called the Sadducees. And they were some religious leaders of the day, and they were trying to trick Jesus. The reason is that Jesus comes onto the scene, and his very first year is his year of popularity. It's where he's doing his first miracles. It's where he's healing people and teaching people for the very first time. And he is incredibly popular in year one. But near the end of year one, he starts to get some opposition because the religious leaders are saying, we don't like all the attention this Jesus guy is getting. And not only that, Jesus stopped just saying, hey, you know, I'm a great teacher. I'm doing great miracles. He started telling people that I am the Son of God. Me and God are one. And this upset the religious leaders. So for the rest of his ministry, they tried to trap him, to trick him, to mess Jesus up, to say something that would cause the people to riot against him. And this is where our text is going to pick up. Read it with me. It's going to come on the screen so you can follow along in YouVersion. Matthew 22, 34 through 40. It says, hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert of the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Now, hopefully you see what's going on here. Jesus has silenced this group called the Sadducees. He has shut them down. He has shut them up. They cannot come back and say anything. So this other religious group, the Pharisees, say, okay, we've got to stop this. What is a question that is going to trip up Jesus? What's a question that if we ask it and he answers it wrong, the people are going to riot against him and maybe even take his life? And one of the experts of the law, of the old Jewish law, of what we would call the Old Testament, says, I've got it. I've got the thing. I've got the one thing that if he messes this up, it's going to cause people to riot. Hey, Jesus, what is the greatest verse? What is the greatest commandment? What is the thing? Now, there are hundreds upon hundreds of commandments in what we call the Old Testament. So Jesus could have picked from anything. And the way they were going to trap him is if Jesus said something that they thought was not that great of a commandment or they didn't think was that essential, then they would have said, see, guys, he's a false prophet. Let's ignore him. Let's get rid of him. Let's crucify him. Let's just be done with him. Now, if you ever read the stories of Jesus, typically when he deals with the Pharisees, he is really blunt and he doesn't give them what they want. They ask him a question and he just either asks them a question back, which is really frustrating. I don't know if you've ever tried to get some help and you're like, hey, what do I do? What do you think you should do? Like, that's frustrating. Just tell me what to do. Jesus typically would just ask them a question back, or he would infuriate them by they would ask him something and he would say something that was so off their radar. He would say something that they thought was so controversial, they would get mad and they would just like get so angry at him. In this instance, though, Jesus plays it pretty safe. He could have picked any verse, and he picks this verse. I'll read it to you. This is what he says. Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your, what's that underlined word?
Mind.
This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as, what's that underlined word?
Yourself.
All the law and prophets hang on these two commandments. So Jesus actually plays it safe with the beginning of his answer. What Jesus does is he starts to quote a prayer, which in the Jewish world is called the Shema. And the prayer is an incredibly important part to their life. In fact, the Shema prayer is a prayer that a lot of Jewish, especially the traditional Jewish people, will pray at least twice a day. They pray it in the morning when they get up, and they pray it at night. The Shema is such an important part of their lives. They actually will write portions of it on the door frames of their house, on the gates going into their neighborhood or into their house. And it is so important that they teach it to their kids. And the way that they teach it to their kids is every single night when they tuck their kids in, it is the very last thing they say to their kids. As if to say, I don't want you dreaming about or thinking about anything else but this law of God. It is so important to them. Now I want to show you where we get this from. This is from what we call the Old Testament. It is a book called Deuteronomy. It was written by a guy named Moses. Charlton Heston played him in the movie. Moses writes this, and I want you to see in this contains a portion of what is the prayer called the Shema. This includes what Jesus just said. Let me see if this is familiar to you. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9 says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. Does that sound familiar at all? He then goes on to say, These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. So in their culture, they believe that God gave them this one verse. And there's lots of verses, and they are to try to apply and live out every verse. But God said, this is the one verse. You've got to get this right. If you want God to bless your life, and you want God to bless your nation, and if you want God to be with you, you got to get this one verse right. It is so important. He says, I want you to write it down. Write it on the doorposts of your house. And I always envision this, like if you ever watch sports and you see them come out of the locker room, a lot of times they hit a sign and it has like their team's motto for the year or maybe their team's motto since beginning, and it like fires them up. And as we go out on this playing field, we're going to honor this code that we've played by. And so as they would leave their household, they would see it on the door frame of their house that they are to love the Lord their God with all their heart, with all their soul, and with all their strength. And then it was on the gates as they would enter into their neighborhood or enter into their household. It was on the gate as if to say, no matter what happened to you at work today, when you're walking back into your house, you need to remember that you've got to love God with your whole heart, with your whole soul, with your whole strength. It was so important to them because they believed that you could not truly love other people unless you got this one thing right. That you must love God with your entire being in order to truly love other people. So Jesus plays it kind of safe. He says, this is the greatest commandment. Let me tell you what it is. And he tells him this, and no one fights back. No one says, no, I think that's wrong. But Jesus does something that is interesting. The Old Testament was written in Hebrew. The New Testament is written in Greek. And when Jesus uses the word love, he could have used various Greek words. A lot of times the word that they use for love is the word phileo. It's where we get Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is known the city of love or brotherly love, right? The phileo type of love is this friendship type of love. It's this love that says, I love you because we're friends, because we're buddies, because we hang out. But it's kind of implied that this love is, as long as you're being nice to me, I'm going to give you this love back. It is a brotherly, it's a friendship love. And so this idea, if Jesus would have said, phileo, God, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, it would have been this idea of you love God as long as God's blessing you. As long as God's giving you what you want and what you need, you love God. But as soon as God doesn't provide for you, the friendship's kind of on the fringe, you can just check out and go away. But Jesus doesn't say phileo, love. He uses the word agapeo, or agape is how we would translate it. Agapeo, this is what that means. It's a commitment of devotion that is directed by the will and can be commanded on as a duty. I just said duty. My middle school sense of humor cannot handle that word. Here's what that means, though. Agapeo is a commitment of devotion. And you are so devoted when you agapeo love someone that you just obey and you follow because it's just what you do. That you don't question it. That when you're in this type of love, you have such a commitment to them, it is as if a soldier is following a general's lead. And if the general says jump, you just say, how high? I don't question why we're jumping. I'm just following your lead. I am under your authority. And Jesus says that that is the type of love that you are to love, agapeo love, with your whole being, with your whole commitment, with everything you are. You are to love God with three things. You love God with your heart, and with your soul, and with your mind. Now, this is incredibly important for us because so often in the Christian world, we love God with our heart. And we talk about the heart a lot in church circles. Like, we will say things like, give your heart to God, or have you committed your heart to God? And that's great. That is a part of the solution. That's part of the equation. But just loving God with your heart is not everything. In fact, if you only love God with your heart, you're missing out on the life that God has given to you. Jesus said that if we follow him, we will have life and have it abundantly. And you don't have to raise your hand. I'm not trying to call anyone out. But let me just ask you, is your Christian life, would you define it as being an abundant life in this world? Have you experienced the love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness that God promises we have in him? Most of us have not. And the reason we have not is because we've engaged God with our heart, but we haven't engaged God with all of our emotions. Translation. If you sit in a service and you hear a dynamic pastor and they play some music and you get the warm fuzzies and you get those little goose pimples on you, you'll say, oh man, that was so good. I just love Jesus. I love Jesus with my whole heart. But then when you walk out the doors and life gets hard, isn't it easy to say, I don't know if I love Jesus as much as I did 20 minutes ago. I made this commitment, God, I'll go anywhere you want me to go. And then you walk out into the real world and it's like, I didn't really mean that. There's no music playing. There's no emotional pull. There's no pastor teaching me or looking over my shoulder. Like, it is difficult to obey God. Now, we need the heart portion. We need our hearts to be engaged with God and engaged with Jesus. It is the mind portion that is where our emotions come from. Our emotions, typically we'll think that our emotions come from our heart, but your emotions come from your mind, that your mind controls how you feel about things. And when something happens to you, you experience an emotion. And literally, chemicals are released in your brain based off the emotion that you feel. Now, because most of us have never gone through a class or never talked about or figured out how to control our emotions, they are so powerful, we just start swinging at things to fix it. We say, oh man, I feel so angry right now. I just need something to solve it. And then we end up making the situation worse. Or man, I need some joy. I feel so sad. I just need something to make this better. And we dive into something that makes it worse. Jesus said, though, that the key to this whole thing, all of this Christianity, is that you experience such a love by God that in return, you love him with your whole heart, soul, and your mind. That is, you make your mind subject to Jesus. That the emotions that Jesus, that God has planted inside of you, that you actually experience these emotions in a way that is honoring to God. Now, for most of us, when we are in an emotional state, those emotions are not very honoring to God. Like, you're pretty good when things are going well, but when you get angry, most of us don't know how to be angry and not sin. When you're stressed, most of us don't know how to use that stress to better ourselves. We just want to fix it quickly. I want to show you, though, the definition of mental health, of having good emotional health. According to the Mental Health Foundation, a positive sense of well-being, which enables an individual to be able to function in society and meet the demands of everyday life, people in good mental health have the ability, this is so important, make sure you get this, people in good mental health have the ability to recover effectively from illness, change, or misfortune. People in good mental health can handle illness, change, or misfortune. So that means that when life hits you hard, you don't unravel at the seams. I can't tell you what 26 is going to bring to you. I cannot promise you that 2016 is going to be the best year yet. I can't promise you that you're not going to get sick or someone that you know and love is not going to die. We live in a fallen, broken world, and somebody in 2016 is going to hurt you. Somebody's going to leave. Someone's going to say something that's going to cut you deep. Something in this world is going to happen. I can promise you that. It does. This is life. This is the world we live in. And I hope that you see this is why it is so important to have God engage your emotions, because things are going to happen this year. And when those things happen, are you going to have an agapeo-type love for God that says, hey, this is it, God. You're all I got. My world is falling apart because what people are saying about me or what people are doing or based off the economy or circumstances, but I'm not going to shake in my faith in you. My emotions are healthy enough that I can still stand strong in a relationship with you. The question for you to wrestle with in this series is, do you control your emotions or do they control you? Do you control your emotions or do they control you? Here's the thing. Your emotions are not bad things. They're not. God has created human beings to experience and to feel emotions. Your emotions that you have, they're not to be ignored. Your emotions, the reason you're having your emotions is your body is telling you this is a reaction that needs something to be done. The emotions that you have, the emotions including things even like worry and anger, those are godly emotions that you should not feel ashamed about. The problem is that we don't know how to control our emotions. And so in our emotions, we end up doing things that are not honoring to God because our emotions control us and we don't know how to control our emotions. According to research, that every single one of us in this room, when it comes to our emotions, we are either stuffers or inflictors. When it comes to our emotions, we are either stuffers or inflictors. And what that means is because we don't know how to deal with our emotions, and emotions are so powerful, when something happens to us and it causes these emotions to go off, we either stuff it deep down inside and just say, "This, I'm just going to react so poorly, I'm going to do something crazy, let me just stuff it, I'm not going to talk about it, I'm just going to keep it down inside." We either stuff down our feelings or we inflict our feelings on other people. And that is when you feel stressed, everyone around you is going to feel stressed. When you feel angry, everyone's going to know we need to avoid her just for a few more minutes. Your emotions, they cause you to have a feeling. And when you do not control your emotions, they can end up doing damage either to yourself or to those around you. The healthy thing is not to stuff your emotions deep down inside and never do anything with them. Your emotions were given to you by God, and it is a message by God telling you to do something. But the question is, do you control your emotions or do they control you? Now, researchers have said that there are literally hundreds of emotions that we go through, that there's just dozens upon dozens, hundreds, literally hundreds of emotions. But they've taken all of the emotions that human beings go through, and they've divided them into 8 categories. And I was doing research over these 8 categories this week, and these are categories that every single one of us are going to feel in 2016. These are emotions that all of us were experiencing. And it was interesting to me as I was looking at these 8 categories, each of these categories coincidentally has an emoticon that represents it pretty well. Any of you guys use emojis when you text? Anyone use emojis? How lazy have we become as people? Like, we don't even express our feelings with words. It's just face right there. That'll tell you everything you need to know. Well, here are the 8 categories of emotions that we all experience at some point. Number 1 is anger. Anger. Anger includes fury, hostility, inability, or annoyance. These are feelings, emotions that you are going to go through in a year, and these emotions are given to you by God. Another emotion is sadness. Sadness includes grief, self-pity, despair, dejection, or loneliness. This year, something's going to happen. You might feel lonely. Someone may have left you that you thought is never going to leave you, and it's going to cause you to feel sad. And in that sadness, are you going to bury that deep down inside and not deal with it, or are you going to inject that feeling on someone else? And this is why you come home, and you're like, you're taking it out on your kids, and you're like, I don't even know why I'm so angry. I'm so mad right now. It's because you've been stuffing feelings deep down inside that you've never dealt with. Another feeling and emotion is fear. Fear includes anxiety, edginess, nervousness, fright, terror, or apprehension. Another emotion that we will feel is enjoyment, which includes joy, relief, contentment, delight, thrill, euphoria, and ecstasy. Now, here's the problem. We're so broken, like even with joy. When you feel sadness or you feel anger or you're feeling lonely and you want to feel joy, we want this to be such a quick fix. Often, don't we find joy in things that actually end up hurting us? We settle all the time for temporary joy, which ends up causing us so much heartbreak in the long run. Why? It's because we have a hard time controlling our emotions. And we think, I just need a quick fix. If I just eat this, if I just do this, if I just go there, it's going to help me not feel those emotions, those painful emotions anymore. But unless we solve this problem, we're just putting Band-Aids on bullet holes. Another emotion that you feel is love. Love includes acceptance, trust, devotion, adoration. Another category of emotions is surprise, which includes shock, amazement, and wonder. Now, a lot of times we think of surprise, we think of that as a bad thing. Like, I don't want to be surprised. Like, just tell me everything. I don't want to know any surprises. But, like, a surprise can be a great thing. Like, If you won the lottery this coming Wednesday and you did not play, that would be a great surprise, right? Holy cow, I didn't even know. I didn't even play. How did I get this billions of dollars? Surprise. Disgust. Disgust is an emotion. It includes contempt, scorn, aversion, distaste, or revulsion. Another emotion that we feel is shame. And shame includes guilt, remorse, humiliation, embarrassment, or chagrin. Chagrin? 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 I feel shameful because I don't know how to say that word. Shame, guilt, remorse, humiliation, embarrassment. Can I just tell you that at some point this year you're going to feel some shame? You're going to feel embarrassed because you didn't live up to someone else's standards, you didn't live up to your own standards, or maybe you didn't live up to God's standards. And that shame that you feel, it is such a powerful emotion. It can lead you to do things that will destruct your world. And the goal is not to stuff shame deep down inside so we don't feel it. The goal is to get shame out, to learn how to deal with our emotions in a healthy way. Emotionally healthy people know how to say what they are feeling in a way that doesn't destroy those around them. Emotionally healthy people know how to say, listen, I'm stressed right now. I'm stressed. I'm angry. I feel such joy in me right now. But I'm going to control this emotion and not let it cause me or lead me to do something that I'm going to regret in the long run. In some of my research on this, it has opened my eyes to what a spiritual idea this emotional health is. And according to one pastor, his name is Peter with a last name that I can't say, he says, to the degree that we are unable to express our emotions, we remain impaired in our ability to love God, others, and ourselves well. Let me read that again. To the degree that we are unable to express our emotions, we remain impaired in our ability to love God, others, and ourselves well. Now, why is this so important? Because what did Jesus say was the greatest commandment? The greatest commandment is to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And if you're not emotionally healthy, you will never be able to love God with your whole mind. And if you can't love God with your whole mind, you cannot fulfill the second commandment. Now, Jesus was just asked for one commandment. What is the greatest commandment? But he throws in a little extra commandment. He says the first commandment, the greatest commandment, is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. But then he says the second is like it. As if to say, here's some parentheses. Like, really focus on this one thing, get this right. But the second one is very similar to it. It's incredibly important. I know you only asked me for one, but I'm going to give you the sequel right up front. And Jesus said the second commandment that is like it is to love your neighbor like you love what? Help me out. Yourself. Why is this so important? Because until you learn to accept God's love for who you are, you will never be able to love yourself. And if you cannot love yourself, you cannot love your neighbor. This is so important for us today. Because so many of us, we've only gotten part of the equation right. We've given God our hearts, but we haven't done the hard work of engaging Him with our minds and giving Him our emotions and learning how to control our emotions. And we are constantly on this roller coaster of life, and we are allowing our circumstances to dictate how we live. I believe, though, there's another way. And the way is to be emotionally healthy. Now, what I'm about to say is just for Christians, okay? If you're here today and you're not a Christian, you're just checking things out, you have complete freedom to totally ignore this next part. I believe everything else that I've said so far applies to everyone in the room. Your emotional health is incredibly important. But if you're a Christian, this next part is for you. So if you're not a Christian, feel free to get on Facebook at this point. You can use our free Wi-Fi. No one's going to judge you or think anything of you. If you're a Christian, though, I want you to look at why this is so important. A verse that was given to us by a guy by the name of Paul, oftentimes in the Christian world we call him the Apostle Paul, when he was writing to a group of Christians in the early days of Christianity, he wrote this to him. He says, we demolish every argument and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Now, I don't know if you noticed what he said, but he said, if you're a Christian, it is up to you to take every thought captive, and you make it obedient to Jesus Christ. So here's what that means. If you've got anger issues, God's not just going to take away your anger. If you've got depression, God's not just going to, you know, magically wave his fingers and take away your depression. If you're addicted to something because you're constantly seeking out joy and fulfillment in that area, God doesn't just typically, I'm not saying he can't, but typically God does not just like wave his hand and heal us of everything. That for a Christian, because we have the power of God living inside of us through the Holy Spirit, it is up to us to take our emotions and to make them obedient to Jesus Christ. So that means when you feel anger, that is an emotion that God has given you. But what you do with that anger is the difference between honoring God and sinning. And in that anger, you take it to Jesus and you make that anger obedient to Jesus. You don't stuff it. You don't inflict it on other people. You make your anger obedient to Jesus, because sometimes God has given you anger to make a difference in the world. But in your anger, do not sin. Joy is an emotion that God has given you. He wants you to experience. In fact, Jesus said that when you have a relationship with him, you experience life and you'll experience abundant life. Joy is an emotion that God has given us that he wants us to experience, but he doesn't want us to experience it by selling our soul to things that will just give us temporary happiness. He wants us to experience a long-lasting joy, and that only happens when we take every emotion, every feeling that we have, and we make it obedient to Jesus Christ. Do not be ashamed about the emotions that you feel. The emotions that you have are given to you by God, but do not be controlled by your emotions. I believe with all my heart that your greatest obstacles in life are not the things that happen to you, but how you respond to what happens to you. Your greatest obstacles in life are not the things that happen to you, but how you respond to what happens to you. And I don't know what's going to happen to you in 2016. I don't know. I don't know if your relationship will get better. I don't know if they're going to leave. I don't know if someone you care about so desperately is going to die a tragic death. I don't know. I don't know. I cannot predict the future. What I can tell you, though, is that the greatest obstacle is how you handle the things that happen to you. And emotionally healthy people are the type of people that can go through something like sickness, can go through something like hurt and pain, and come out better on the other side. I love this quote. It says, it is impossible to be spiritually mature while remaining emotionally immature. If you're doubting why this series is so important, or if you're saying this doesn't feel very spiritual, well, the ultimate goal of a Christian is to be a spiritually mature person, someone who engages God, who follows God, not just with their heart, but also with their soul and with their mind. And it is impossible to be fully mature, a fully mature follower of Jesus Christ, if he does not have control of your emotions. If you say, I love Jesus, yes, I do, but then you're yelling and screaming at people every time you get angry, you're not a fully devoted follower of Jesus. And every single one of us are in progress with this. None of us have this mastered. But how different would 2016 be from 2015 if we did the hard work of starting to take our emotions and making them obedient to Jesus? What would happen in 2016 if we took the feelings that we have and instead of burying them or pouring them out on other people, we started getting them out in a healthy way so that we could actually make changes in our life? Here's the application. This is something for you to do if you want to work on this. The application is this: identify your emotionally unhealthy areas. That's it. That's your application for this week. Now, if I were you, I would write it down. What are the areas in your life? What are the areas, if you've set a goal to get physically fit, what are the things that stop you from doing that? Is it stress? Is it anger? What are the things that you've got to look in the mirror? And this is where the hard work is. Because you know what's easy? It's easy just to ignore our emotions and ignore our feelings. But if you're honest with yourself and you say, you know what? When I get stressed, I just unravel. Write it down. In the next few weeks, we're going to talk about the process of taking our emotions and making them obedient to Jesus. And we're going to figure out together how do we do this. But the first step is to identify what are your unhealthy emotions that are controlling you and stopping you from living the life that God has for you. Will you guys pray with me, God? We just come before you, and we're just so thankful that you're God of second and third and fourth and hundredth chances. And right now, God, we just ask that you would just stir something in our hearts, that we would feel some passion and some love for you. But God, that you'd go farther than our hearts. And you would engage our minds. God, would you open our eyes to see what are the emotions that are unhealthy in us? What are the things we've been bearing for years? What are the hurts? God, what are the letdowns that we haven't told anyone about? God, would you bring them to the surface so that we can be whole people, so we can be emotionally whole. We love you, Lord. We thank you for what you're doing. We thank you that you're so patient with us. And we just ask, God, that you would just take our mess and that you would make something amazing with it. We thank you for what you're going to do in advance. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.